I'm Andy Zaltzman. Welcome to the News Quiz as the countdown to the 2029 general election begins in earnest.
Our teams this week in honour of England's equaliser in Wednesday's Euro semi-final and what the French electorate have just chosen to do, we have Team Dodgy Pen against Team Dodge Le Pen. On Team Dodgy, we have Angela Barnes and Zoe Lyons. And on Team Dodge, Ian Smith and the freelance political journalist and author Marie Leconte. First question in this week's news, Chris, and go to Angela and Zoe. Who has spent the week basking in the aftermath of an astonishing personal triumph that many people had thought was beyond him?
Well, I know this, Andy, because I was there, actually, as it all unfolded. Of course, you're referring to Lewis Hamilton winning his ninth British Grand Prix at Silverstone.
No, that's not the answer I've got written down,
all right.
I'm afraid. No, let's pass this over to Ian and Marie. Who spent the week basking in the aftermath of an astonishing personal triumph that many people had thought was beyond him?
Well, if it's sport, Gareth Southgate.
No, can we try and focus? We'll have one final go. Who has spent the week basking in the aftermath of an astonishing personal triumph that many people thought was beyond him?
Must be Mr. Starmer.
Correct, Zoe. Finally, yes. Let's have some focus, please. This is a new. Correct. 2 points. And how has the week treated you all?
It's been very windy this week. I think it's just everybody breathing out.
It is comedically difficult.
Give them time, Ian.
I think something will go wrong soon. I'm really hoping that Starmer gets pressured by a small minority of the Labour Party to hold a referendum on whether we get rid of the moon. Something like that, right, just to get it going.
Are you a keeper or a...
I'm completely against the moon.
Right.
I haven't thought of the reasons why at the minute.
That's what we do with referendums.
Well, it's got a dark side.
I don't like tides.
Let's look at Labour's first week and that rather mountainous intro. Rachel Reeves, the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, complained this week that Shears inherited the worst what?
I think she's complaining about the general circumstances.
Yes, correct.
That she's inherited an absolute mess. I think she, I mean, maybe quite rightly at first, but it does look like she could use this as an excuse for not doing anything for quite a long time, if you kind of set that up. It feels a little bit like, you know, when you go into a cubicle and you're like, oh, this is terrible. And you go to go out of the cubicle to pick a new one, but someone's already waiting outside that cubicle and you've got to look at them and go, I didn't do any of that. That's nothing to do with, I inherited that from the previous. So it seems like she's in that situation, but instead of a toilet cubicle, it's the entirety of Britain.
Yeah.
Well, particularly the economy.
Yes.
Right. And to be fair, you know, none of us really know what the true state of the economy is. She's going to do a review and they'll be, you know, try and work it all out. But they could say anything, because I think to most of us, when we hear about the economy, it's a little bit like a drunk girl crying outside a nightclub. Like, you know that something's wrong, but you'll never make out what it is.
Yes, the worst set of economic circumstances since the Second World War, she claimed. Is that fair, Marie, as a political journalist? You think that's...
I have not seen the figures, although I did really enjoy it. I can't remember who it was, but said, oh, well, you know, when the Conservatives came in 2010, there was that note from Labour saying, oh, sorry, there's no money left. So clearly this is not a new problem. And I think it was Darren Jones, who's another Chief Secretary to the Treasury, who said they couldn't even afford paper this time round.
Our next question takes the form of a misleading headline. Obviously, headlines don't always tell us the full story, but there is a genuine story behind this misleading headline that I've got here. Angela and Zoe, you can have this one. Government to bury Milton Keynes under two layers of housing.
This is about the housing policy. Correct. Of the new government. And it's quite exciting for someone like me because I'm quite into urban planning. You've got cricket, I've got urban planning. Which one of us is going to be most useful come the apocalypse? That's all I'm saying. But what I think it's a good thing, this Grey Belt plan, because basically it's people think the Green Belt is all, you know, animals are farthing wood and beautiful green. But a lot of it is just, you know, derelict buildings and rubbish that, like, badgers have built old petrol stations or something. I don't know. But a lot of it is land that's no good. So why not...
A badger's built a petrol station?
I didn't think you'd notice I'd said that, but no, I think that's... That's what people think that the Greenbelt is, you know, this beautiful idyllic place, but it isn't. A lot of it's brownfield or whatever. So let's snatch some of that back. And the only thing I ask is that if we are going to build on Greenbelt land, can we please make some of it affordable housing? But the most important thing is that when they do build it, can they please just build it where Jacob Rees-Mogg can see it out of his window?
Well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Tarmac, the Lake District.
Are you going to show you're working on that one, Ian?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's an idea I've been pitching.
OK.
Tarmac, the Lake District. TTLD, for short. The Lake District's... I mean, other than Kendall Mint Cake, I don't mind if it's completely tarmac. Keep the wet bits, I think that's what the geographical term for them is.
I am quite confused about how they decide the difference there between Greybelt and Greenbelt. Like, is it literally the idea of sending someone to different bits of the Greenbelt going, lovely, or going, ugh?
Greybelt is usually bits that have been built on, so like brownfield sites and things where there's been stuff built on it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what colour bin to take out on which day, so
no.
I don't know if I'm qualified for colour coding the entire country.
I don't think anyone's asking you to.
Well, I'm willing to step up to the plate. TTLD, Tarmac, the Lake District.
Education. Now, Labour has confirmed plans to acquire thousands of new watts for Britain's schools. Anyone?
Is it perhaps teachers?
It is. What's the thinking behind that when we have the internet and there's no point children learning anything because we are just dust in the winds of history?
Quite interesting, actually, I think, this past week, the Labour government, because they've just been doing stuff. So, you know, they came in, they were like, well, we're lacking teachers, so we're going to hire teachers. And so, like, they didn't think of that, the last lot.
They've got a target of 6,500
yes.
teachers, which, if they don't meet it, of course, it'll be their own time they're wasting.
They're going to fund it by the VAT, aren't they, on private schools, and a lot of parents of private school kids are very lacrosse about that.
I had some good teachers. I had a teacher called Mr. Harris who, if kids were talking, he would just point at the window and say, someone's going to get flying lessons. So he would just threaten to kill a child. And I've changed Mr. Harris's a fake name because I'm aware that you're probably not allowed to say that to children and I don't want Mr. Ross to get in any trouble.
Another question now. What, according to Keir Starmer, is, quote, much worse than he had thought?
Being Prime Minister.
Larry the Cat's reign of terror?
This is the prison crisis.
Yes.
Right, because we already knew the NHS was under stress, and this week it's been revealed that prisons are under stress as well and they can't cope. And I just think, God, if we can't rely on our hospitals and our prisons, where are people like me supposed to find love?
Also, how are the prisons full if we've just taken all the post office workers out of them? There must be loads of room now.
Let's look now at the makeup of the new cabinet and the new parliament. Labour has appointed a cabinet containing a record number of watts.
People who are not Matt Hancock?
We've certainly improved on certain recent cabinets for that.
Yeah. Women, perhaps?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. I think I should probably take the lead on this story. if I can get a word in edgeways, please.
There's also more state school educated
yes, correct.
People than there's ever been before, which I think can only be a good thing, because I don't think just because you went to a private school, just because you went to Eton or whatever, means you're, you know, going to be the best leader just because you can speak Latin.
Well, I mean, I went to an all-boys private school. I studied Latin and Greek, very much like Boris Johnson, also like Boris Johnson and many other members of the former cabinet. I've never held down a proper job. where I diverge from them is that I am fully aware that this makes me completely unsuitable for top-level politics.
I was taught by nuns in Ireland in the 70s, and I turned out all right.
So 335 new MPs as a result of the election. Amongst them is one who is the first ever Member of Parliament to have done what? Anyone?
Is that be born in this century?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Correct.
Sam Carling.
Yeah.
He's so cute. I know that's the wrong thing to say and it's really patronising, but you're like, oh!
It is weird that there's an MP that I'm old enough to be their mum without even being a slag.
Does show how disastrously our education system has collapsed, because, I mean, we could always rely on it previously to crush the confidence out of all children. Yeah. Yeah, so we've let that slide.
It means there's like probably the biggest gap between the oldest and youngest. The oldest MP, Sir Roger Gale, is 80 years old, and that means our oldest MP is still someone that Joe Biden would ruffle their hair and call them. Come here, you little scamp.
Any other new MPs that have caught your eye?
Yeah, there's quite a few interesting ones. So, Labour's Rachel Taylor used to be a Wimbledon umpire. There's Roz Savage from the Lib Dems is the only woman to have rowed solo across the Atlantic, Indian and Pacific Oceans. There's a couple that I've found that haven't made the news. Harold Winchester has the record for assembling a Mr. Potato Head upside down. And that's as in he's upside down while he's doing the potato head. Caroline Horton was a semi-finalist on Britain's Got Talent for being able to wet herself on demand. There's a guy called Michael Wright. You're not going to believe it. He hatched from an egg and no one really knows why. And then Pauline Wellers, who's got the record for assembling a Mr. Potato Head upside down. But in this case, the potato head is upside down. And she's normal.
Starmer's made various ministerial appointments from outside his parliamentary cohort of MPs. For our next question, our panellists have to match the expert to their ministerial position. OK, so the three experts and three ministerial positions, you have to tell me which expert has got which position. So the experts are a scientist, an expert on prisons, and a high-ranking lawyer. And the ministerial posts are science minister, prisons minister... and Attorney General, the government's chief legal advisor. Now, if you're a long-term politics follower, this is a bit of a trick question. Anyone match them up? Zoe, Angela?
I think, Andy, it's a scientist is a science minister, the yep. prisons expert is going to be a prisons minister, yep. and the lawyer is going to be Attorney General.
Correct. Three out of three.
I do really like, though, that James Timpson has a key-cutting business. Like, it is a proper so, like, movie for kids about crime, because he's now the prisons minister.
Yeah, because he does a really good thing where, like, Timpsons employ a lot of, like, former convicts at their workplace. And I cannot stress how much I think that is a brilliant thing. But, yeah, what I will say is, key-cutting.
Yeah.
If someone's just come out of prison, like, what were you in for? Oh, I robbed a load of houses. Do you want to learn how to make all the keys? It's a mad system, like, right, yeah, you can either do key cutting. We've got a balaclava factory, if anyone wants to work.
And can anyone tell me what will have to happen to these experts before they can become government ministers?
They'll have to be ennobled, is that what
yes.
they call it? Yeah. They'll have to become lords because yes. they're not MPs.
So they've got to sit in the House of Lords. That's
yeah.
So they can, well, that's easy, isn't it? Because you just got to turn up, fall asleep, get 305 quid. It's the opposite of going to the opera.
But you still get to dress up in your nice furs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nice.
Maria's somebody who's moved to this country and writes about our politics. Can you explain the House of Lords after the 15 years of living here?
Do I have to? It's not necessarily about system. Like, and again, it feels very novel to just bring people in the House of Lords because they're going to do jobs as a general kind of pat on the back, which is what it become, I think. And especially the fact that I think Chris Grayling, nicknamed Failing Grayling, you may remember, will now also be joining the House of Lords thanks to the outgoing Conservative government. And it's a bit like, oh yes, yeah, so I suppose we could have just this entire time just put good, interesting people in the House of Lords and then give them jobs instead of going, well, you seem pleasant, and off you go, have money for the rest of your life.
Yes, it's been a difficult week as the nation adjusts to a period of change and transition. No more Jimmy Anderson, no more Andy Murray at Wimbledon. How will we cope? Incoming Chancellor Rachel Reeves said Labour has inherited the worst set of circumstances since the Second World War, and we've all had disappointing inheritances, an unwanted vase, a politically incorrect sideboard with a weird engraving of Mozart and a wildebeest, Auntie Muriel's collection of contraband Victorian taxidermy badgers, those haunting eyes, those sad, sad tales, Grandad's generational blood feud with the Sicilian Mafia, just me on that one, or the Zaltzman paternal family hairline. One of the purposes of the new National Wealth Fund Labour has announced is to invest money in new technologies that might not otherwise attract investment, such as decarbonisation, green hydrogen, or my latest invention, plastic-free invisible gas Lego. Don't tell anyone, it's just air, but it's all about the branding. Right, at the end of that round, the scores are 11 to Angela and Zoe and 8 to Ian and Marie. Look at democracy around the world. Marie and Ian, you can have this question. Which prominent European nation has decided it would be wrong to go right?
France.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, I meant to talk about it now.
Oh, yes, yeah.
If you insist.
Don't worry, I've got this one covered.
So, in a nutshell, we had European elections a few weeks ago. They went quite poorly, by which I mean the far-right Rassemblement National was the biggest party, at which point Macron was like, well, not quite I quit, but just ugh, and so decided to call some snap legislative elections. So that's the bit where you vote for the National Assembly sort of MPs. Macron was not going anywhere. I know some British people got confused about that. But so, yes, that happened. The first round was, again, I would describe it as unfun, probably, in that the Rassemblement National came first again, but in the meantime, so all the left parties had managed to form a coalition together, which I think was generally brilliant to see, because there's nothing the left hates more than the left. So for them to actually manage to create this kind of front from the far left to the centre left with the kind of Greens in between was really well done. And so, yeah, so we had a second round, which was very stressful, and actually the far right came third. So we had the left coalition first, and then the second was Macron's party, the centrists, and then the far right. And now there is no government.
Utopia.
I was going to say, is that a bad thing? What happens now, then?
A lot of shrugging, basically.
That's exactly how I'd put it. Essentially, again, so all three won just under a third each, and they just do not want to work with each other. And that's kind of where we're at. And I genuinely wish I could tell you more. And, you know, in the sort of, if you're really an expert and you understand what's going on, there's lots of subtleties. There's not.
There was a lot of, there was something that didn't really vet their candidates very well, the far right, didn't they? I saw one candidate promised, if people voted for her, she said, I will stop making racist jokes if you vote for me. And you're like, is that
No, but I think, you know what, what's quite nice is that she lost, so she can just keep being racist.
So the French election remains in a state of considerable confusion. Sure, I think it suits the French psyche quite well. We have won, but we have also lost. I took a gamble, it paid off, and it backfired. The duck without a beak is like a sofa in a paddling pool. Macron attempted to clear the muddying waters of French politics by lobbing a hippopotamus into them, and it sort of worked. The only problem is now there is a hippopotamus. Things turned ugly on the streets. One report said that two members of a Parisian string quartet hit a baker with their Stradivariuses. The baker retaliated by whacking the musicians with two sticks of French bread, and the musicians then clonked the baker once again with their instruments, which goes to show violins, baguettes, violins.
You look so pleased with yourself.
Highlight of my year, to be honest. Right, let's move across the Atlantic. Who said he is not going anywhere?
Is it me immediately after I've had a roast dinner?
But that's not
you say it's me and Zoe, because we both live in Brighton. We're on a southern rail line, so we live here now.
It's Joe Biden.
It is.
It's Joe Biden who is... Oh, dear. I mean, I've got a 17-year-old Jack Russell, and he doesn't know where he is either. He's not in charge of the world's most powerful country, so I'm less bothered about that. But he clearly isn't up to the job at the moment. He really, really isn't. And the only person that's going to take him out of that position, apparently, is the Lord Almighty.
Yes.
So, which sounds quite dramatic. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the thing about it is he's only 3 years older than Trump. But Trump has done that incredible thing of being both alive and mummified at the same time. I think Trump is like one of those fast food burgers that if you put it in a cupboard, it just won't decompose. Yeah. If, like, if, dug him up, they'd be like, yep, that's Trump. That, yeah, he's just made up of highly preserved burger meat and Dorito dust. Yep. That's him.
And he'll probably still be riding quite high in the polls at that point.
He'll probably be doing well. People were originally behind him after the debate. There was a lot of sort of Democratic support for him, sort of going, you know. But then this week, George Clooney, one of the biggest Democratic fundraisers, has come out and gone, he's not up to the job. And he should know because he was an ER doctor for a very long time. It's his family, really, though, isn't it? That keep it. It's Jill Biden. And like, we all know why. People hate it when their spouses retire.
I think that the problem is, you know, you mentioned how, you know, Trump is also old, but the difficulty for Biden is that people won't vote for Biden because they think he might be mad and detached from reality, whereas for Trump, people want to vote for him because he is mad and detached from reality.
Because he's basically said, only God can stop me, which immediately is already forgotten about natural causes. But still, but I think your best chances is to get a staffer to dress up as God and convince him he's having a vision.
Right. Yes, amongst the possible candidates who have been rumoured to be being lined up to step in to replace Biden include Vice President Kamala Harris, anyone who can talk coherently for more than 12 seconds, Big Bird from Sesame Street, Andy Murray, and the late Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So, watch this space. Keir Starmer saw Joe Biden this week, reportedly was going to give him what?
Is it a head start in the world leader's 100 metres? It was an Arsenal shirt.
Correct.
Presumably with his name on the back so he can remember it.
Yeah, he said Biden was on really good form.
Yeah, but that's what...
But that, you shouldn't have to say that.
That is what you say after visiting somebody in the care home, isn't it?
He ate all his dinner.
Very happy today.
Right, the scores at the end of our World Democracy Round. It's now 15 to Angela and Zoe and 12 to Ian and Marie. We will finish off now with some more misleading headlines on other news stories from the week. Ian and Marie, since you're behind, you can have this question. The headline is, Japan to make news quiz compulsory. Can you explain the truth behind that headline?
Laughter. I yep. think, or puns about baguettes and string instruments. Yeah, they're saying that everyone, like, almost want to make it a law that everyone should laugh at least once a day.
Yep.
And that's annoyed a few people who are saying it's our constitutional right not to laugh. And a few people have been exercising that tonight. I've spotted you. So it has caused controversy of basically enforced fun.
Yep.
Apparently, laughing once a day reduces the risk of heart attack. And I just think, God, it's always something, isn't it? Red wine reduces the risk, dark chocolate. One day, I'm just waiting for the headline of having a heart attack once a day reduces the risk of having a heart attack.
Yes, the Yamagata Prefecture in Japan has passed a law requiring residents to laugh at least once a day. Business operators are being asked to develop, quote, a workplace environment that is filled with laughter. That has to be the right kind of workplace laughter, though. Nervous, awkward laughter. Well, history shows that that can result in you being turfed out as Prime Minister after 49 days. That has to be the right kind of workplace as well. A laughter-filled environment is fine in, for example, a comedy club, less appropriate in a funeral parlour, or even a cockpit. We're going to land safe. We're going to land safe. Not reassuring. This can go to Ian and Marie. The headline is, Disastrous July Gets Even Worse for Scottish Nationalists. What's the story behind that?
Well, I guess it's probably either got to be football or Nicola Sturgeon's house has been raided again.
Right, it's football, yeah? Mm.
What a glorious game. Another 90 minutes of utter tedium followed by one inspired moment at the end. It's given me my favourite moment of the Euros, which was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who's part of the England staff, celebrating wildly and then remembering that he is Dutch. So he was like, get in! What a sad day for my country.
My partner's Dutch, so it was quite exciting. But she only got to show her knickers with the words goal written on the back once, so...
I do think I'm desperate for Gareth Southgate. Even more than England want Gareth Southgate to win, because I feel like he's got all these demons from missing the penalty, that I think if England win, he's going to open his mouth in a scream and just loads of black smoke will come out. And then he'll just be free. Right. He won't even know where he is or what he's been doing. Just sort of like, oh, what? Have we won?
Oh. Well, what if he opens his mouth and white smoke comes out? I think that means the Pope has to become England manager.
I know I'm a bit ignorant because I don't know much about football, but I don't really understand how a manager can make that much difference to how a team plays. It's like, what, if they don't have a manager, what, they just sit on a pitch and make daisy chains? Like, don't know what to do. And every man I've ever met thinks he would be the best England football manager. Let's just make it like jury service.
That's a good idea. Yeah. You get a couple of weeks a year.
Yeah.
I'm writing that down, Angela.
I do love an England game. Like, you've got to love an England game because for that glorious, like, 90 minutes, or usually more, of an England game, all the knobheads are contained. Like, they're all in their pubs and their houses. You can go into a Lidl, it's like a Waitrose in there.
If you think putting a firework up your ass makes you a knobhead, then shame on you, mate.
I just like them winning because I live next door to a pub and it makes it less likely that my car will be set on fire.
Yes, well, another great triumph for Labour Party. 14 years of Tory government and the England men's football team won only one tournament semi-final. Labour's going at a rate of one a week at the moment. Now, whether they can keep that going remains to be seen. Spain awaiting Sunday's final, no doubt bricking themselves at the auspicious 1966 coincidences that point the way to an inevitable England win. Labour election victory. Tick. England winning their semi-final 2-1. Tick. Rolling Stones still going strong. Tick. Joe Biden a bit past his best. Tick. Russian government clamps down on dissent. Wars going on around the world. Middle East a bit tense. Tick, tick, tick. It's all building up. Charles Dickens being dead. Tick. Glasgow being further north than Melbourne. Tick. Zebra eaten by a lion on a Monday in June. Tick. It's written in the stars, people. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's News Quiz, and our winners are Angela and Zoe by 15 points to 14 over Ian and Marie. Thank you very much for listening. Until next week, goodbye. Taking part in the News Quiz were Angela Barnes, Marie LeConte, Ian Smith and Zoe Lyons. In the chair was me, Andy Zaltzman, and additional material was written by Alice Fraser, Cody Darla, Katie Sayer and Peter Talouche. The producer was Pete Strauss, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.
Andy Zaltzman and the crew will be back again at the same time next